97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon? Would you like to ride in my beautiful balloon?
You can always rely on Carl Middleman to put the fabric of the show together to make it all come together. I'm Bo Matthews. That's Mark Cox. And obviously, Carl Middleman's working because he did that with that song.
Yes, he did.
It's all for you.
We are going to talk about the balloon glow with our special guest, Jess Cagle, out at Brookdale Farms. But first, I've got to tell you, Mark, she just returned from Montana. She drove out with Chief Greg Brown, the fire chief out in Eureka, with Adventure 360, and they went digging for dinosaur bones. Jess, welcome back to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, ma'am. How are you?
I'm great. How are you? Good morning.
I'm good. How was that trip? How was dealing with Chief for, you know, that whole drive and everything? Was it all right?
That is going to be my question.
Right. Well, luckily, we're great friends, so... He is awesome. He is awesome. We had such a great time. I know he had said when he went last year, it was very, very hot. We got very lucky. It wasn't crazy hot this year. So we did find some really cool stuff, though.
My second question was going to be, you got Greg to go out there and actually do some physical labor? I mean, he had to dig for bones?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yes. Actually, it was hard to keep up with him.
Did you get video of this?
No, but we can get pictures.
We're going to have to see some pictures of that for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I do want to point out that Chief Greg Brown, of fire chief out in Eureka, is so impressionable. He heard us talking about magnet fishing several weeks ago. And you know what? Mm-hmm. Within 2 days, he had went on to Amazon and bought a magnet fishing kit and then took Jess out magnet fishing. So...
Wow.
They're both gullible. How was that excursion?
Yes, and then I went and bought one.
No kidding. So have you caught anything yet? We have to ask that up front.
A couple nails.
Okay.
Yeah, nothing too exciting yet, but not going to give up. And we have
no safes, no guns.
Somebody else did, but we did not. But several other employees now at Brookdale are interested in it also. So.
Wow, yeah. We've started a trend there, Bo Matthews. How do you like that?
Yes, you did.
I think we did. The reason we have Jessica Cagle on is to talk about the balloon glow. So the interview is running this weekend. The event is actually next weekend, the 30th, out of Brookdale Farms. And this is how many years in a row have you guys done this, Jess?
I believe it's our fourth year. We skipped 2020, obviously. So other than that, I believe it's the fourth year.
Yeah, I know we had reservations 1 year and it got rained out or something. It was too muddy. Mm-hmm. They didn't want to have people down there a few years back. But what a great event it is. Kind of set it up for people. There are probably people listening, I'm guessing, who've never been to Brookdale Farms, don't know where it is down there just outside of Eureka. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, we have a little bit of everything. We do carriage rides downtown. We do weddings and events. We host parties, birthday parties. We have a fall corn maze. We have a haunted maze. We do sunflower maze. We have country Christmas. We do carriage rides at Celebration of Lights out in O'Fallon. There's just always something going on at Brookdale.
Well, the weekend we're talking about next weekend with the balloon glow, I know a lot of people go crazy with the balloon race down at Forest Park, and that brings thousands of people together. But the balloon glow does that as well, and it's a full day of activities starting in the afternoon, and you can bring the kids out. There's going to be pony rides. How many balloons do you guys get to set up out there about?
Right now, we have about 13 or 14 confirmed.
Mm, beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it is beautiful. Whenever you have them set up next to the lake there, it's gorgeous.
And what time does the event start for everybody?
So our gates open at 4. We have the balloons are going to glow from 8:30 to 10. Live music from 6 to 11. The fireworks are going to be at 10 after the glow. And then the music's going to keep going until about 11. So in previous years, we've ended the music right at the end, right before fireworks. But this time we're going to make it a little bit later to kind of keep the party going.
Well, how do people sign up for it? Can you just go online and get reservations?
Yeah, you can get pre-sale tickets online through our website, brookdalefarmsinc.com. It's $25 a carload right now. If you purchase your tickets before midnight on the 29th, that Friday, the day of the event, you can pay when you arrive. Definitely pay when you arrive. It's $30 a carload, or you can still get tickets on the website the day of, but it will also be $30.
Yeah, Shotgun Creek Band is going to be your entertainment. Paw Stoppers, which is a great organization that I've supported for a long time, is actually going to be doing a demonstration. Any idea what that looks like and what time that's going to happen?
I believe that I've never had time to go over there and watch the demonstration. but they do, I think they do several demonstrations throughout the day. A portion of the proceeds actually goes to Paw Stoppers. So, and then we have food and beverage vendors. There's some vendors that are selling merchandise. We have, like you said, the pony rides. That will be an additional cost for the pony rides. We do have inflatables for the kids that are included. Like you said, Paw Stoppers. So we're super excited.
Yeah.
No camel rides?
That is up in the air.
Really?
Literally, you'd be up in the air if you took one, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So, we actually, were talking about maybe adding that this week. So we have not made that decision yet.
Well, we can encourage them, right, Bo, at the very least. For people who haven't been to Brookdale, Jessica, I try to describe people where it is. If you take Highway 109 south from 44 to where it dead ends there and you turn left on W, it's just a short ways up on the left-hand side. It's not far at all, right?
Correct. Yeah. I'd say about 5 minutes from the highway.
Okay, yeah, it's easy to get to if you haven't been down there. And I was there for the poker run with Bo, raising money for the Eureka Police Association. And the venue, that indoor venue you have down there is just beautiful. What is parking going to be like on the 30th? Do you park people out in the grass there? I mean, it didn't, the parking lot situation, I'm trying to envision what that looks like if you're loaded down with people.
Yeah. So we have several different areas on the farm that we use for parking. We have one that is for vendors and employees. We have one field that's just for the balloonists. We have one that is specifically for pre-sale tickets and sponsors. And then we have our day of, a day of field that's the biggest field. So, cause most people show up the day of, and then that is another reason that we are, having the music go until 11. So that way it kind of gives a little bit more time for people to filter out. Some people want to leave after the glow, but you know, some people will want to stay for the music. So that way everybody's not trying to leave at one time.
Yeah, this is a great family event, or get your friends together and head out there. And again, the charge is per vehicle, so you can load in 40 people in your little VW Beetle and you'll be fine. It's one price. Yes. But they encourage you to bring chairs and blankets because, you know, you want to just, you know, kick back or lay on the ground and watch the balloon glow. And no outside food or drinks are allowed, but the good news is they are going to have plenty of vendors and beverages, as they always do at Brookdale Farms. So it really is going to be a great event. And since this show is called Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors, we just wanted to feature another outdoor event. Just get out of the house and enjoy it. And, you know, my wife and I were just talking about it this morning. It's like the temperatures around here in the middle of the day just suck. But in the mornings, it's really beautiful. And in the evenings, it's really beautiful. So Brookdale Farms is going to be a great destination for a lot of people. And hopefully, Jessica, you guys see a lot of first timers out there for the balloon glow.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And then that'll bring people out and it open the doors for them to come out to some, you know, many of our other events.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, we hope so. Listen, Jess, thank you. You clearly are a person full of patience to ride all the way to Montana with Chief Greg Brown, and can't wait to meet you in person someday.
Well, thank you, and look forward to meeting you. Also, I did want to mention We do, because of our petting zoo and the pony rides, which we have an awesome petting zoo. So got to stop by and say hi to our pony princess and to the camels and the goats. We have some new baby goats out there. But we don't allow dogs on the farm because of our petting zoo and our pony rides.
Well, that just makes good sense.
Even though it is an outside event.
Leave Fido at home.
Yeah.
Well, and what dog enjoys fireworks anyway? Not one that I know of.
Exactly.
You don't have a local you don't have a bathtub out there they can crawl into like my old dog Fletch used to do.
Right, or under the bed.
Yeah.
So. All right, Jess. Float trips. They also do float trips out of Brookdale Farms too. Jessica Cagle is operations manager. Is that your title?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, we're gonna go with that. All right, operations manager. All right. Hope it's a great balloon glow for you, Jess. Great talking to you, and I'll see you at the magnet fishing hole somewhere.
Awesome. We'll see you soon. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
All right.
This is Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. And are you in town next weekend, Mark? You could take that in with your family, right?
I will be camping that weekend, Bo, actually.
Uh-oh. Okay. Well,
there'll be
stories from that.
We can talk more about that, but we're getting the camper and dusting it off and getting out that weekend.
Good for you. All right. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk with Tim Chelsvik. He is the great outdoorsman, hunter, fisherman, and fitness guru. He's done it all. We're going to talk to him next on Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. Stay right there. Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors, along with Mark Cox. My name is Bo Matthews, and we've got Carl Middleman, our executive producer, at the helm. And this segment is brought to you by Razorback Armory. I will tell you that I just texted with Jesse, one of the owners of Razorback Armory, yesterday, and I said, what do you want me to feature? He says, we have the Sig Sauer 300 Blackout. Ammo is stocking up left and right, so if you are in need of a specialized firearm, find your gun concierge in De Pere on Manchester Road. Get the address and make an appointment if you like at RazorbackArmory.com. Our next guest on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors, a good friend to this show, and he's probably out in the woods more than Yogi Bear is. Tim Chelsvik from Drury Outdoors, The Thinking Woodsman, and DeerCast. Welcome back to the program. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys, I'm good. Just like Yogi Bear, I'm only wearing pants, no shirt.
Hey there, Yogi.
Well, that's because you're working out like a beast. That's why.
Yeah, never ends. I just finished my first ultra marathon back in late May down in Kentucky. And that was a real experience, man. That was 33 plus miles of trail running. And I think it's a one and done deal for me. I did it. And
I did it.
Have you done it again? Yeah, is that like the Tough Mudder or whatever they call it?
It turned out to be that. It's not that branded, yeah. Franchise, but it was all off road and it had rained the day before, so it was muddy and the rocks were slippery and you're coming in and out of these hollers and down in southeastern Kentucky, and it's deep and dark. Down there in them hollers. So a lot of elevation. There was like 4,000 feet of elevation gain over the course of the entire route. So there was a lot of up and down there.
You have to tell me, Tim, because I have a lot of relatives in that area. Where were you in southeastern Kentucky?
Near Whiteley City and Stearns.
Okay. All right.
I thought you were going to ask him where to register for next year.
How can I do this?
Yeah, no, honestly, a whole bunch of people on my mother's side are from that area. And I can tell you, we used to joke with them, speaking of the elevation, that they were at the bottom of the hollers is where they all lived. And we used to joke that you had to lay down flat on your back at 12 noon and look straight up to see the sun. That's how steep the mountains are in places down there. So
that's a whole part of the chorus.
Oh, I'm sure.
You'll never leave Harlan alive, right?
That's right. It's not far from Harlan. I know exactly where you were. That's fantastic.
Well, Tim, I want to ask you, I have seen all of your shirtless pictures on Facebook. Thanks a lot. I'm sure. I should call into Mark Zuckerberg and flag you. Take those things down. You make me feel bad. Have you ever thought about going to Steve Austin's Broken Skull Ranch?
Yikes. No, I really haven't thought about that.
Have you seen that show?
No.
Me neither.
What? What?
No.
Oh, my gosh. Am I alone
so
on this island?
What network, Bo?
I don't know. Go to YouTube. It'll be on there, I'm sure. Dude, you got to do it. You could probably finish it.
So far.
It's really cool. Broken Skull Challenge, I think the show is called. Anyway, have you been spending much time in the outdoors besides when you're running from bears?
Yeah, doing a little bow fishing, and I got really what I got to start doing is getting out to move my trail, my trail cameras, and hang some more stands for deer season and get a few food plots put in for the fall. So that's kind of the big stuff that's coming up. People always kind of, it's a cliche anymore, like, well, deer season never really ends because you're always doing stuff year round, running cameras and running mineral sites where you can, and you know, all those other things, and I don't have a ton of big properties to hunt. I'm hunting usually pretty smaller suburban properties, and so but I still run trail cameras. I still have stands I gotta go out and maintain and replace, so that's a lot of the work that's going to be coming up. And I'm just trying to avoid this triple digit heat, and then once things cool down a little bit, I'll start getting that stuff done.
Yeah, I'll bet. Let's talk about the bow hunting the bow fishing, I should say, for a minute. Where are you doing that, and what are you fishing for?
We usually bow fish the Merrimack down around Old Town Fenton, and it's all rough fish, so you can't legally shoot game fish in Missouri, so it's a lot of the exotic Asian carp, so the silvers, the big heads, the grass carp. Every now and again we'll shoot a gar in the mix. They're an endemic species, are not exotic. But yeah, it's just a lot of rough fish.
You know, now I don't mean this as any sort of insult to the Merrimack, but the times I've been on it, it's pretty murky and brown. How do you know what you're shooting at?
Well, it's like every time you go on the Merrimack, you get hepatitis. So it's not the cleanest river down there.
Just saying.
Well, that's a billboard for promotion and travel.
No kidding.
Float the Merrimack. Yeah, it's crazy how the Merrimack is almost two different rivers up by the highway bridge up around Cuba. It's beautiful, but down here by us, it's kind of worse for the wear. But you really depend on water clarity to see the fish.
Okay.
And those silvers, they'll come up and they're filter feeders, and so they'll swim kind of with their mouths near the surface, just mouthing along. And that's usually when you see them. But when the water's really turbid after a big rain, or if it's on the weekend, there's a lot of boat traffic, it's really hard. You got to go to some of the creeks and the backwater areas where it's a little clearer to see. But yeah, you're really depending on sight.
And what about the flying Asian carp? Is that a problem on the Merrimack?
Yeah. I mean, there are multiple times where my friends and I have been hit. Like, it's almost like you're attacked. I mean, they're not small fish, and they launch themselves out of the water. We've had them hit our generator where they, you know, you're bow fishing at night. You got all these LED lights lit up around the front of the boat and in the back. And we'll get into a creek, and they start to get jittery, and the water gets shallow, and they all just launch out of the water, and they're hitting the generator, and they're shutting it off, and it goes dark, and you're getting a hit. And it's – we had – my buddy Tony, he owns the boat that we fish out of. He was seated in the driver's chair of the boat, and a big silver jumped out of the water, landed on his lap, and then, you know, they flounder real hard and real fast right on his crotch. It just was like,
ow.
And it hurt him bad.
did he keep the fish, or did he get so mad he threw it back? Because I might have punched it and thrown it back in the water.
Yeah. Well, and it brings up kind of an interesting point with bow fishing. You have to keep all the fish that you shoot or that enter your boat. Because otherwise it's considered wanton waste.
Huh.
And so in Missouri, the law is that anything you bow fish has to leave with you. The no one wants a pile of dead fish dumped at the boat ramp or just in the river.
Right.
So it really makes a mess. So thankfully Tony has a landscaping business, and he owns some land moving equipment. He digs a big hole and has a garden, and so he just kind of uses them as fertilizer. So if you're thinking about bow fishing, or if you are a bow fisherman, make sure that you are being responsible and taking the fish home with you, not leaving a mess for other waterway users.
Yeah.
So you never eat the fish you're catching?
Well, out of the Merrimack, I just, you know.
What's the purpose then?
They're invasives. So you're removing them from the ecosystem. But in places where the water is cleaner, I have had silver carp. I have had big head and grass carp. And it's really, you have to fillet them. You're not even fillet. They have like a back strap on them because they have these Y bones that come out where most domestic fish have just kind of a smooth rib cage. A lot of these Asian carp have a Y bone that comes off the top of their rib bones. And so you have to kind of slice out this back strap between the spine and that Y bone. And then you have the rest of the fillet meat. So they're a little different, but out of good water, they can be really great. And of course, if you fry them, like anything tastes good fried. So you've always got that option.
Yeah, true. Fried carp. I've never had it. Never really thought about it. Yeah. Are you going to any of the big lakes right now for game fishing, or is it just too hot?
I just don't have the time. Like I'm sure guys are still catching walleye and still catching bass, and the small streams kind of get hurt this time of year. We've got a great smallmouth fishery in Missouri. In fact, I just wrote an article for the Missouri Conservationist. It was called Your Summer Angling Highlight Reel, and it's all about where to go across the state to catch smallmouth and largemouth and catfish and walleye also were in the mix. And the thing you got to watch with our small streams is that oxygen content depletes in the summer with the heat. And so our smallmouth bass kind of become vulnerable to, if you catch them, you fight them too long, and then you release them, they have a hard time recovering from that. So a lot of real strong smallmouth devotees, they won't fish the small streams in the summer because they know how hard life is for smallmouth there. They'll opt for some of the bigger impoundments in the lakes and fish them there where they have access to cooler, more oxygen rich water. But it's just kind of just trying to be really cautious with the resource, because it could take 8 years for a smallmouth to reach decent size. Like, they are a slow growing and an older fish compared to other fish.
Tim Jelzvik is our guest from Drury Outdoors, the Thinking Woodsman podcast, and the DeerCast. Very cool tools and information you can always get by connecting with him. Tim, I don't think I've ever asked you this, but every time we talk, I learn something. And I'm just curious about your educational background in wildlife. Did you go to college for all this? Because you're on your game.
I have a minor in zoology, and then my major was in recreation, and my undergrad was a recreation park and tourism administration. So I ran camps for a lot of years, outdoor education, and then I went and got a master's degree in, of all things, nonprofit administration, and now I work in outdoor television.
Yeah.
So follow the bouncing ball, I guess.
Well, it prepared you well, certainly, for what you do for a living. Since we talked last, you might have some interest in hearing what Carl caught when he went to Canada. That was pretty cool.
Speaking of walleye, I caught we have to say this correctly or else the people I was with get mad. It was a 29¾-inch walleye.
Carl, that's a monster.
It was great, but it was in Canada, so their rules are backwards. You have to throw the big ones back. You can only keep them. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can only keep between 18 and 24, I think it is.
That's a slot limit. Yeah. They want the big fish are really good breeders, and so they're just looking at population dynamics.
And then I caught a 28 as well. I got to keep two keepers. But I had the biggest catch of anyone, except one of the 20-year-olds tied me the last day.
Yeah,
sure.
I'm a little hurt that you didn't text me the pictures, because I'd like to see them.
I will text them to you right now. I'll text them to you right now. I didn't want to brag, but I did really well.
They're on his phone. They're the cover photo. They're on his computer. You won't have any trouble getting a picture. Trust me.
What did you catch them on?
We used leeches. Okay. On Pipestone Lake in Emo, right on the other side of International Falls.
It is too bad. We just came back from Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, and just caught the kids caught a ton of I didn't fish. The kids caught a ton of rock bass and had a great time. But walleye are kind of the thing to catch up there.
Oh yeah, that's good fishing.
Just for the record.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Just for the record, tasty. Tim. The pictures of Carl and his fish are as easy to find as your shirtless pics of you. So just go on Facebook.
And I'm not on Facebook. And you know, Tim and everyone, Yogi Bear didn't wear pants. He didn't wear shirt. He only wore a tie and a hat.
Wow. You know, I was thinking Smokey when I said
that.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
You're Yogi. Right. You're right. Yogi Bear.
So now you have a new theme of pictures, Tim.
I'm just going to.
Tie
and a hat.
I just saw the look on Bo's face. He's getting a visual.
Hey, guys, I just want to mention we have been super hard at work at Drury Outdoors over the past couple of years developing a new mapping experience for our app. We've not had maps before, and our users keep asking for maps so they can log where all their tree stands are, where they can log their paths into their hunting locations and see what, you know, the wind direction and what that's gonna look like for their scent dispersal when they're hunting. And manage their properties, like put in food plots on your maps and log what you've actually what you've planted there. And we have virtual rain gauges that you can drop onto your food plots so you can know how much rain the plot's gotten or how much rain it's going to get. So we're really proud of it. We just launched it at the beginning of July, so it's a very, very new feature. But if folks go to their app store, they can purchase the two new features, the two new subscription levels of DeerCast. It's Elite Plus or Unlimited, and it gets them the maps and parcel data, so you can see who owns different pieces of ground and whether it's asking for new, you know, access to new areas to hunt or maybe just figuring out who your neighbors are. It's super helpful.
It sounds like it. Yeah.
I cannot imagine how difficult it was to get those Priuses with all those cameras on it, you know, into the woods to film all that stuff.
Well, you got to go with a four-wheel drive off-road Prius.
Yeah. It don't happen because I've shopped. All right. Tim Chelswick, always great to talk to you, buddy. Drury Outdoors, the Thinking Woodsman, and DeerCast Elevated Experience. Thanks for joining us again on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors, my friend.
All right. Thanks, boys.
You bet. Yeah, learn something. I'm with you. I learn something new every time I talk to Tim about, you know, whether it's fishing or hunting or deer casting. Doesn't matter. It's fantastic.
I live vicariously through him because he is a master hunter. It's just amazing. And the technology is coming around, too, which is really helpful, especially for those that just go out and just sit in a stand and don't see anything forever. So
yeah, that describes me. Maybe not this year. This is going to be different this year.
I hope so for you.
No, you go bumper hunting, don't you, in your neighborhood?
I saw more deer on the way to work this week than I've seen in the woods in the past 5 years. Honestly, one morning.
Oh, no.
One morning. There must have been 15 deer along one of the roads I take to get home.
Well, thank you so much for listening to Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors. Share the show with anybody that would be interested in the topics that we talk about on this program. And so, Mark, are you good?
We're all good. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week on Second Amendment Radio on the Great Outdoors.
Stay cool. See you, boys.
Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Welcome into the show this week. Mark Cox here, along with my partner Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman.
Yeah, buddy.
Hi there.
With coming up with some Stranger Things bump music.
Well, our friend Tim, who we're going to have on in the third segment of the show, has now become a runner. So he's running up that hill, Mark.
I see.
It's tease. Where I'm thinking forward.
It's got lots of different connotations there. Sorry, but thank you, Carl, for that. Great show for you today, by the way. We're going to talk about a very popular event today, Bo, that takes place at Brookdale Farms out in Eureka. That I know during COVID they had to cancel it 1 year, and they had rain 1 year and had to delay the thing. But it's on this year for next weekend, July 30th, and we'll talk about the big balloon glow coming up here shortly.
Absolutely. On the heels of last week's show, though, you revealed to the listeners and to me and to Carl that you were getting ready to go light your hair on fire over at the racetrack. You survived. That's good. Or you didn't go.
I have to tell you, I have never experienced or seen anything like that. I don't know where I've been. I mean, I'm not a number NASCAR and racing is it's not my number one sport.
Right.
But I did not even know there was a thing called Formula Drift until I went to the Worldwide Technology Raceway this past weekend and experienced it. I got to ride in one of these cars, and it's incredible. Here's how I described it. You've seen the Blue Angels, and you know how impressive it is to watch them at an air show when they fly in tandem, like just a few feet from each other at hundreds of miles an hour. Well, on the track, on four wheels, they'll get two cars doing basically simultaneous moves, spinning in circles, burning rubber the whole time without touching each other. They get judged on this. These are 1,100 horsepower engines on like a variety of frames. You know, I think the one I rode in might have been a Corvette frame. And it was incredible. We were doing 100 miles an hour into turns and spinning in circles just a few inches from the concrete wall. And they get judged on how well they execute those.
So this is a team event? There's two vehicles in a team? Is that right?
Well, they're competing against each other. Ultimately, oh. and they send one as the lead car and one as the chase car in the first round, and then they swap roles in the second round.
Points.
And then they try to earn points, and then at the end of it, they're judged, and one of the two of them gets eliminated, and they move on to the next round. So they're not a team, so to speak. They're competing against each other.
But they have to make each other look good.
Correct. Yeah, it's something else. Apparently it's something that the majority of their audience members are about the age of the drivers. Most of them are in their 20s, maybe early 30s. And it's something else to see.
And you got to go just with one. You weren't like doing two cars.
No, we did. There weren't two cars. I'm sure having the extra 200 pounds in the car probably threw him off a little bit going into these turns. And I would imagine you would not want a car right next to you if you had an extra 200 pounds of weight in your car and you weren't sure how that was going to affect your drift. But it's something to watch if you've never had a chance to see it. And in fact, they put a GoPro camera on the dash.
Mm-hmm.
And my video is posted up to my Facebook page, The Mark Cox Show on Facebook. If you're on there, we posted it up for people to watch. And you can see my eyes get big around as saucers when we're flipping around in a circle at 100 miles an hour.
But you didn't throw up like Mark Reardon did.
No, I did not.
In the Blue Angels.
No, not at all. Kept it all down.
And by the way, trying to translate the 200, that could have been 210 or that could have been 290.
It could have been anywhere in that range.
There's some range.
On the lower end of that range, though.
That's pretty cool because they had a ride experience that I did at Disney years and years ago, the Be Petty experience, which does come through worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And we did about 160 miles an hour, and that was phenomenal. But that's just going fast. That's not sliding.
Yeah. They would get up to 100 miles an hour in 3.6 seconds and then go into a turn. He'd hit the brake and hit the gas and it would just turn in a circle. And it was very precision driving. It was amazing to experience, I can tell you that. And I'm a fan. I went on YouTube and started looking up these races and watching these guys. It's incredible.
That's very cool. Well, congratulations on surviving that and not throwing up.
Yeah,
true. Like Mark Reardon.
True.
It has been a big week when it comes to the Second Amendment part of this show, Second Amendment Radio. By the way, Mark, hats off to you for being very kind and cordial with Ann Dorn when the results of the trial with her husband's killer ended this week in a guilty verdict, which is fantastic news. But you did a great job with that conversation.
Well,
I heard that.
Thank you for that, Bo. It was good to get Ann on. The retired sergeant from the city lost her husband, Captain David Dorn. Stephen Cannon, convicted on all charges by a jury. He was found guilty on all the charges. And apparently that charge carries a minimum life sentence. Plus, he's got three or four other charges for assault, and so he's going to go away for a long time. He won't get sentenced till September, but he's going to be in the big house for a long time. And I'm glad she got some justice in that case.
And that could be for the rest of his life. Is the goal?
Well, it should be. Yeah, I would think it would be. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, good guys with guns. There's been a couple of headlines that I don't know how it worked, but it snuck out into mainstream media. First, we have the local story that happened in St. Charles. And I will tell you, when I heard about the mall shooter, I actually took the video of that. And we'll talk about both. And I hope we can talk about both. The mall shooting story that came out. They were saying, within 2 minutes, this good guy with a gun was able to neutralize the situation. The updated information is it took him 15 seconds.
Yes.
To neutralize the shooter.
Now, he is Eli Dickin, and I'm going to say his name over and over again because he is a hero for what he did. 22 years old, nerves of steel, was shooting and approaching this guy armed with a semi-automatic rifle in this food court while steering past, you know, people nearby, including his girlfriend, to safety. Fired eight, hit the guy 8 out of 10 times at 40 yards, Bo Matthews. I don't know, non-shooters may not appreciate that, but that's 120 feet in a huge, very tense situation with his pistol. Fortunately, he had at least 10 rounds because he fired 10 rounds. I don't know, he might have had a 15-round magazine in his handgun. But
yeah,
constitutional carry had only been approved in Indiana on July 1st, and he happened to be in that mall, you know, legally carrying his handgun when this criminal decided he was going to murder people. And thank goodness for him.
Yeah, that's true. But when I saw the story and I read the facts about it, especially with the 15-second time frame, because the guy came out of the bathroom, shot five people, I think, total with his rifle, and it took 15 seconds for is it Elijah or Eli? Well, we'll call him Eli.
Eli Dickin,
It's Elijah, but he goes by Eli.
Okay, well, what it did to me, and I put it on my Facebook wall, I shared the story, and I said, practice, and then practice some more. And because when I go to the range, I'll be honest with you, I go, I'll shoot, I'll see where I'm at, I'll shoot again, I'll see where I'm at. Dude, when it's going down, you've got to know that you can pull that trigger 10 times or whatever the capacity is to neutralize the danger and the evil.
So,
and just hats off to this young man, but it woke me up, and I can't wait to get to the range.
Somebody has come up with what they're calling the Dickin drill. It's a man-sized target. Here's the Dickin drill, in case you're wondering. From concealment, so wherever you carry your concealed weapon, you have to draw your weapon, shoot 10 rounds at 40 yards within 15 seconds into a full-size target. At least 8 of those rounds must be on target to pass.
Wow.
A hit factor of 1.25 or above to pass. You have to shoot cold. So in other words, you can't have already practiced, shot several magazines through your gun. They want you to try this cold because that's what this kid did. He pulled his gun out and hit that guy 8 out of 10 times. I mean, it was just incredible shooting. And I hope when he does come out and speak about this and we find out more about him, that he ends up, I don't know.
Training people.
he apparently he was not in the military or anything. His grandfather taught him to shoot. And apparently did a very good job at it.
Of course, my heart kind of skipped a beat, Mark, when I saw that he lawyered up, if you will. But I thought, why would he need a lawyer when it was this situation? But you know what? They're going to dissect this as much as they can, so it's probably good that he did that. Guy Relford is a name you're going to probably learn more about as he was representing Eli Dickin. But the Dickin Challenge, is that what it's called?
The Dickin Drill is what they're calling it.
The Dickin Drill.
See if you can do the Eli Dickin Drill the next time you go to the range. So
you know somebody's going to be making
Most probably
shirts
can.
About that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure they will.
And then locally, we had the Quick Trip shooting.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that guy did a great job too. He's I listened to his interview on KSDK, and you know, he wanted to remain anonymous. He said it wasn't easy when you have to shoot and kill someone, but he clearly saved lives and from a violent criminal. So good for him. Kudos to him.
Absolutely. Okay. Are we ready for a break?
We are. Let's go.
Let's go for a break. We're going to talk to Jess Cagle, operations manager out of Brookdale Farms, next about a family event called the Balloon Glow happening next weekend on Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors. Stay right there.
Get more at 971talk.com.
It is Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors. Welcome into the show this week. Mark Cox here along with my partner Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman.
Yeah, buddy.
Hi there.
With coming up with some Stranger Things bump music.
Well, our friend Tim, who we're going to have on in the third segment of the show, has now become a runner. So he's running up that hill, Mark.
I see.
It's tease where I'm thinking forward.
It's got lots of different connotations there. Sorry, but thank you, Carl, for that. Great show for you today, by the way. We're going to talk about a very popular event today, Bo, that takes place at Brookdale Farms out in Eureka. That I know during COVID they had to cancel it 1 year, and they had rain 1 year and had to delay the thing. But it's on this year for next weekend, July 30th, and we'll talk about the big balloon glow coming up here shortly.
Absolutely. On the heels of last week's show, though, you revealed to the listeners and to me and to Carl that you were getting ready to go light your hair on fire over at the racetrack. You survived. That's good. Or you didn't go.
I have to tell you, I have never experienced or seen anything like that. I don't know where I've been. I mean, I'm not a number NASCAR and racing is it's not my number one sport.
Right.
But I did not even know there was a thing called Formula Drift until I went to the Worldwide Technology Raceway this past weekend and experienced it. I got to ride in one of these cars, and it's incredible. Here's how I described it. You've seen the Blue Angels, and you know how impressive it is to watch them at an air show when they fly in tandem, like just a few feet from each other at hundreds of miles an hour. Well, on the track, on four wheels, they'll get two cars doing basically simultaneous moves, spinning in circles, burning rubber the whole time without touching each other. They get judged on this. These are 1,100 horsepower engines on like a variety of frames. You know, I think the one I rode in might have been a Corvette frame. And it was incredible. We were doing 100 miles an hour into turns and spinning in circles just a few inches from the concrete wall. And they get judged on how well they execute those.
So this is a team event? There's two vehicles in a team? Is that right?
Well, they're competing against each other ultimately. Oh. And they send one as the lead car and one as the chase car in the first round. And then they swap roles in the second round.
Points.
And then they try to earn points. And then at the end of it, they're judged, and one of the two of them gets eliminated, and they move on to the next round. So they're not a team, so to speak. They're competing against each other.
But they have to make each other look good.
Correct. Yeah, it's something else. Apparently it's something that the majority of their audience members are about the age of the drivers. Most of them are in their 20s, maybe early 30s. And it's something else to see.
And you got to go just with one. You weren't like doing
no,
two cars.
No, we did. There weren't two cars. I'm sure having the extra 200 pounds in the car probably threw the guy threw him off a little bit going into these turns. And I would imagine you would not want a car right next to you if you had an extra 200 pounds of weight in your car and you weren't sure how that was going to affect your drift. But it's something to watch if you've never had a chance to see it. And in fact, they put a GoPro camera on the dash, mm-hmm. and my video is posted up to my Facebook page, the Mark Cox Show on Facebook. If you're on there, we posted it up for people to watch. And you can see my eyes get big around as saucers when we're flipping around in a circle at 100 miles an hour.
But you didn't throw up like Mark Reardon did.
No, I did not.
In the Blue Angels.
No, not at all. Kept it all down.
And by the way, trying to translate the 200, blah, 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 blah. That could have been 210 or that could have been 290.
It could have been anywhere in that range.
There's some range.
On the lower end of that range, though.
Blah, 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 blah. You know, so that's pretty cool because they had a ride experience that I did at Disney years and years ago, the Be Petty experience, which does come through worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
And we did about 160 miles an hour, and that was phenomenal. But that's just going fast. That's not sliding.
Yeah. They would get up to 100 miles an hour in 3.6 seconds and then go into a turn. He'd hit the brake and hit the gas and it would just turn in a circle. And it was very precision driving. It was amazing to experience, I can tell you that. And I'm a fan. I went on YouTube and started looking up these races and watching these guys. It's incredible.
That's very cool. Well, congratulations on surviving that and not throwing up.
Yeah,
true. Like Mark Reardon.
True.
It has been a big week when it comes to the Second Amendment part of this show, Second Amendment Radio. By the way, Mark, hats off to you for being very kind and cordial with Ann Dorn when the results of the trial with her husband's killer ended this week in a guilty verdict, which is fantastic news. But you did a great job with that conversation.
Well,
thank
you for that, Bo. It was good to get Ann on. The retired sergeant from the city lost her husband, Captain David Dorn. Stephen Cannon, convicted on all charges by a jury. He was found guilty on all the charges. And apparently that charge carries a minimum life sentence. Plus, he's got three or four other charges for assault and so he's going to go away for a long time. He won't get sentenced till September, but he's going to be in the big house for a long time. And I'm glad she got some justice in that case.
And that could be for the rest of his life is the goal.
Well, it should be. Yeah, I would think it would be. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, good guys with guns. There's been a couple of headlines that I don't know how it worked, but it snuck out into mainstream media. First, we have the local story that happened in St. Charles. And I will tell you, when I heard about the mall shooter, I actually took the video of that. And we'll talk about both. And I hope we can talk about both. The mall shooting story that came out, they were saying, within 2 minutes, this good guy with a gun was able to neutralize the situation. The updated information is it took him 15 seconds to neutralize the shooter.
Now, he is Eli Dickin, and I'm going to say his name over and over again because he is a hero for what he did. 22 years old, nerves of steel, was shooting and approaching this guy armed with a semi-automatic rifle in this food court while steering past, people nearby, including his girlfriend, to safety, fired hit the guy 8 out of 10 times at 40 yards, Bo Matthews. I don't know, non-shooters may not appreciate that, but that's 120 feet in a very tense situation with his pistol. Fortunately, he had at least 10 rounds because he fired 10 rounds. I don't know, he might have had a 15-round magazine in his handgun. But
yeah,
constitutional carry had only been approved in Indiana on July 1st, and he happened to be in that mall, legally carrying his handgun when this criminal decided he was going to murder people. And thank goodness for him.
Yeah, that's true. But when I saw the story and I read the facts about it, especially with the 15-second time frame, because the guy came out of the bathroom, shot five people, I think, total with his rifle, and it took 15 seconds Elijah or Eli? Well, we'll call him Eli.
Eli Dickin,
It's Elijah, but he goes by Eli.
Okay, well, what it did to me, and I put it on my Facebook wall, I've shared the story, and I said, practice, 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 and then practice some more. And because when I go to the range, I'll be honest with you, I go, I'll shoot, I'll kind of see where I'm at, I'll shoot again, I'll see where I'm at. Dude, when it's going down, you've got to know that you can pull that trigger 10 times or whatever the capacity is to neutralize the danger and the evil.
So,
and just hats off to this young man, but it woke me up, and I can't wait to get to the range.
somebody has come up with what they're calling the Dickin drill. It's a man-sized target. Here's the Dickin drill, in case you're wondering. From concealment, so wherever you carry your concealed weapon, you have to draw your weapon, shoot 10 rounds at 40 yards within 15 seconds into a full-size target. At least 8 of those rounds must be on target to pass.
Wow.
A hit factor of 1.25 or above to pass. You have to shoot cold. So in other words, you can't have already practiced, shot several magazines through your gun. They want you to try this cold, because that's what this kid did. He pulled his gun out and hit that guy 8 out of 10 times. I mean, it was just incredible shooting. And I hope when he does come out and speak about this and we find out more about him, that he ends up, I don't know.
Training people.
Apparently, he was not in the military or anything. His grandfather taught him to shoot, and apparently did a very good job at it.
My heart kind of skipped a beat, Mark, when I saw that he lawyered up, if you will. But I thought, why would he need a lawyer when it was this situation? But you know what? They're going to dissect this as much as they can, so it's probably good that he did that. Guy Relford is a name you're going to probably learn more about, as he was representing Eli Dickin. But the Dickin Challenge, is that what it's called?
The Dickin Drill is what they're calling it.
The Dickin Drill.
See if you can do the Eli Dickin Drill the next time you go to the range. So
somebody's going to be making most probably shirts about that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure they will.
And then locally, we had the Quick Trip shooting.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that guy did a great job too. He's. I listened to his interview on KSDK, and he wanted to remain anonymous. He said it wasn't easy when you have to shoot and kill someone, but he clearly saved lives and from a violent criminal. So good for him. Kudos to him.
Absolutely. Okay. Are we ready for a break?
We are. Let's go.
Let's go for a break. We're going to talk to Jess Cagle, operations manager out of Brookdale Farms, next about a family event called the Balloon Glow happening next weekend on Second Amendment Radio in the great outdoors. Stay right there.
Get more at 971talk.com.